you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. As has been our custom in the past, we focus on topics that we think will be especially relevant to those seniors, to those people over age 60. And today we have a topic that I think if we were to think what are among the top two or three items that you think about most as you get older? Well, healthcare is certainly one of them, but even almost more foundational than that is how do I obtain the financial resources to allow me to continue living the lifestyle that I've known? Or put differently, how do I obtain the financial resources to pay for my living costs in addition to increasingly uncovered healthcare expenses? In other words, access to financial resources is one of the key questions that comes up more often than anything else for people seeking advice in their later years. So we have with us today a unique twist on that subject, a solution to that question that many people fail to even consider, but I would argue can be potentially one of the most advantageous, one of the most effective ways to meet those needs. Let us start with Susan Arthur. You want to introduce our guest today?
I would love to. We have today with us Bill Nass. Now, he is a vice president of Gershman Mortgage and is a reverse mortgage specialist. So that's our topic for today. Gershman Mortgage has originated over $30 billion in home loans, including reverse mortgages, and has been named one of the nation's top commercial services by Mortgage Servicing News and National Mortgage News. Bill is one of only two certified reverse mortgage professionals living in the state of Missouri, and the other one is his lovely wife, Lisa.
Well, and let me say this before we bring Bill into the conversation. Let me first issue a disclaimer that I regularly issue on this show, and that's that I have no relationship with our guests financially in any way. We want to keep this show as a place where people can come to hear the best ideas and the best possibilities for solutions in their lives as they age. And we think to be most effective with that, we avoid any financial relationship whatsoever with any guest, directly or indirectly. Having said that, I think that this topic, reverse mortgage benefits, is one that holds a lot of potential for many people. Obviously not everyone, but I think too often people have sort of dismissed this idea as something that could be bad for them. And the important thing to do is to gain information and decide whether or not it in fact is suitable for you or not. And so I want to give this option a fair hearing, and there's no better way to do that than to have a guest on who's an authority on this subject, and it's Bill Nass. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Joe. Good to be here.
Well, let's start by giving our listeners kind of an explanation of what this is. Some people have just heard this phrase bandied about, sometimes with negative connotations, so they don't really understand it. Tell us what this is.
A reverse mortgage, first of all, was introduced into our country back in 1987 under the Reagan administration. It was designed for homeowners over the age of 62 to tap into their equity as a means of dealing with rising health care costs, rising costs of living, just generally a way to liquidate funds they might otherwise not have access to.
So this means of financing has been around for
31 years.
And yet many people feel that perhaps it's somewhat of a risky proposition, or maybe they've heard it criticized. Why do you think that some people tend to be dismissive of this possibility?
Interesting question. I think the number one reason is the name. Anytime you have the word reverse with some kind of connotation, it gives a negative feedback. Something's not right here. Why are we reversing something? So that's the number one issue. The technical name for the product is home equity conversion mortgage, and that's what it is. You're converting your home's equity into liquid funds. The other reason I think that people have a negative feeling towards a reverse mortgage is the misconception that if you take out a reverse mortgage, you are signing over the title to your home to the bank. In other words, the bank now owns your home, and that is incorrect. just like a regular mortgage. When you take out a regular mortgage, you sign a note and a deed, and the bank is putting a lien against your property. It's the same thing with a reverse mortgage. A lien is being placed against your property, but you still maintain ownership of the home.
So explain, though, kind of more of the mechanics. So walk us through this. Someone comes in and they decide they own a home and they have equity in it, and they decide to do this reverse mortgage option. Explain the mechanics of how that works.
Okay. First of all, a reverse mortgage eligibility is based on age. So starting at the age of 62 all the way up until however old you are, you can access the equity in your one's home. The younger you are, the less equity you can access. And it's just because the tables that we use to determine how much one is eligible for are based on actuary numbers. And so the older you are, the more you can borrow. The younger you are, the less you can borrow.
And the theory meaning that the older you are, since this is for life, then the payback will come sooner. If somebody lends you money that you'll pay back when you die, if you're 60, then you'll be paying it back sooner than if you're 30.
Correct. Correct. That's exactly what the reasons are. And so therefore, someone coming to us at the age of 62 is not going to have access to as much equity. And let me just back up a little bit and say this about the equity. Most people think that a reverse mortgage is selling your house to the bank and you're going to the poor farm. Most people who come to us do not qualify for a reverse mortgage because they don't have enough equity in their home to do a reverse mortgage. It requires easily 50 to 55, 60% equity in the home to be eligible for a reverse mortgage.
And can you get all 60% of that, or is it based on a percentage?
It's based on a percentage. So at age 62, you're eligible for accessing about 42% of the home's equity. At age 85, you can access about 65% of the home's equity.
That's interesting. So I was kind of under the assumption that you would access a higher percentage of your equity and that you would perhaps qualify with less equity.
The reason why there's limitations on how much equity is allowed to be accessed is because of the way the mechanics of the loan actually work. And that is, when you borrow money on a reverse mortgage, you are not obligated to make a payment on that money. However, the trade-off for not making that payment is the lender is going to be adding interest and mortgage insurance to your balance, and the balance slowly rises over time. That's where the word reverse comes into play. You're not making a payment, the balance increases. On a traditional mortgage, you make a payment, your balance goes down. On a reverse mortgage, you don't make a payment, and the balance goes up.
So that makes sense then. So you need to have more of a cushion if you're a lender, because you know that if, for example, a customer walks out of the bank with $30,000 cash from their reverse mortgage, you know as the lender that at some point that could be $40,000 that they're owed.
Easily, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. The reason why this is done also is because FHA and HUD insure these loans. They insure both the borrower and the bank in case of default. And what's happened over the years, FHA has allowed people to access greater amounts of equity. And what happens is they borrow the money, interest and mortgage insurance is added to the balance increases, 20 years go by, they get ready to sell their home, and they find out that they owe more than the balance is higher than the value of the house.
That's one of those things I hear.
And if that happens, the borrower is actually protected. This is called a non-recourse loan. So if the borrower owes more than the value of the house, FHA covers the loss. The borrower isn't on the hook for paying back. If their house is worth $130,000 and they owe $120,000, they are not on the hook for $10,000. Or if they pass away, their heirs aren't on the hook for $10,000. FHA covers the loss. It's sort of like gap insurance. But over the years, FHA has incurred more and more losses. It's gotten to the point where they're concerned about the program. And over the last 5 years, they have slowly decreased how much equity someone is eligible for.
So do you think that is the result then of the people outliving the actuarial tables?
Yes, it's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. They're outliving, and they're outliving their savings. They're outliving what they've got set aside or what they feel they had set aside in order to live a comfortable life in retirement. They're outliving it, so they've got to turn somewhere.
So this could actually be a bargain for someone who would have good reason to expect to live beyond the actuarial table, since that has to be the basis for calculating the loan. Is that correct?
Say that again, Joe.
In other words, when someone applies for amount of money, you know, they determine the amount that they will lend them based upon their age.
Yes.
And the equity in their home.
Correct.
And if it turns out, though, that age calculation, which of course is based on actuarial number, if it turns out that that's much lower than in fact you expect to live, and many people for genetic reasons and others, you know, their parents, their grandparents lived 101, they're going to still borrow money at an amount on this loan based upon the actuarial tables, right? So
correct.
if it ends up that there's the accumulation of interest and the debt when they die, say that they had borrowed $50,000 and it's accumulated this huge amount, $120,000, $130,000, $150,000, then still it's a non-recourse loan, as you point out. So it means that they never pay more than the value of the home.
Correct. And if they can sell their home for more than what they owe, of course, they're entitled to the proceeds as they would be under normal circumstances. Again, they're title holders of the home. And the same thing goes for the heirs. If the heirs can sell the home for more than what the loan is, they get to keep the difference.
That's interesting. People should think about that, about how those calculations are derived. So another point, though, some people are under the impression that if they do this, then they later end up moving out of their home, that, of course, it will be sold. And I know some contracts provide for that. Is that, in fact, the way they typically work, that if you cease to live in the home, that it can be?
Correct. Under the guidelines for a reverse mortgage, you must live in the home as your primary residence. That's key. So it can't be a secondary home. It can't be a rental property. It must be your primary residence. And The rules for accelerating the loan or calling the loan due are passing away, obviously, if there's two people, both spouses passing away, selling the home, also failing to pay property taxes and homeowners insurance. That's one of the main caveats that go along with this reverse mortgage, is the borrower still must have the willingness and the capacity to pay their property taxes and their homeowners insurance. That's one of the mm-hmm. major reasons there are defaults. And there are defaults on a reverse mortgage. People think, well, how can there be a default on a reverse mortgage where I'm not liable to make a payment? That's true. You don't have to make a payment, but you do have to pay your property taxes and your homeowner's insurance, and you must maintain the home to a level that keeps
in a reasonable condition.
Right, because again, the home is the collateral for the loan.
Yeah, and that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. So anyone considering this needs to have a certain amount of cash flow available or set aside a portion of the proceeds.
Correct.
If they're relying entirely upon this money, they should set aside some proceeds to cover these costs.
Correct. So when we're qualifying people for a reverse mortgage, if their income is not sufficient to handle their current debt capacity, and I mean things like credit cards, car payments, student loans that some people sign for student loans for their grandchildren or for their children, we have to qualify them based on their current debt load, as well as can they pay their property taxes, their homeowners association dues, and their homeowners insurance. If that's not possible with their income that they have, then we can dissipate assets. If they've got access to $60,000 worth of equity, we can dissipate those funds and use those funds to qualify them for the reverse mortgage.
So if they would normally have qualified for, say, $60,000, but you see that there's inadequate cash flow on their financials.
Regardless of what their financials are, they're only allowed to access a certain percentage. So even if they have if we have funds available to make them eligible for more, they aren't given more. They're only given an X amount based on the appraised value of the home.
And that makes sense because it protects the lender as well as the borrower.
Correct.
So I think then that people need to be prepared to say, in determining whether this product is right for them, maybe among the most important considerations is, do they want or do they expect to be in this home long term?
Yes. We haven't talked about this yet, Joe, but the closing costs on a reverse mortgage are much higher than traditional loans. And for that reason alone, the borrower has to go into this with the idea that this is going to be a long-term solution. If it's not, if they plan on selling their home in a year or two, given the fact that the closing costs are expensive, it's cost prohibitive to do it. We haven't talked about this, but let me just mention, closing costs are based on the value of the home. So right away with reverse mortgages, there's two types of mortgage insurance. And by the way, mortgage insurance is what makes this a non-recourse loan. The mortgage insurance that the borrower is paying, not out of pocket, but paying through the proceeds of their reverse mortgages, that's what protects them from ever having a loss. The two types of mortgage insurance include, one is an upfront mortgage insurance premium. It's an initial mortgage insurance premium, which is 2% of the value of the home. The other is an ongoing mortgage insurance premium, and that's a half a percent of the value, or half a percent of the value or the balance of the loan. So it can add up quite quickly as far as what are some of the fees required for a reverse mortgage. For instance, a $200,000 home is going to have a $4,000 mortgage insurance premium right off the top. Then there's going to be an origination fee from the lender, and then there are going to be closing costs, things such as an appraisal.
So the origination fee, what might that run?
That can go anywhere from 1% to 2% of the value of the house as well.
So we're at potentially 4%?
But that's not counting now the closing costs, which are things like the appraisal, the title work, the underwriting, the processing.
Another 1%?
So we're talking about on a $200,000 home with no mortgage, your closing costs could be close to $10,000.
Okay. $10,000.
Now, some people look at that and it scares them away. But again, you're talking about accessing equity from your home without the obligation to make a payment. So it's a little different kind of animal.
So, and I know that it depends upon the age of the person as to how much they can borrow. But let's use this example, and it's hopefully even enough numbers to where we can round in our heads. So $200,000, let's assume, is the value of the home.
Right.
And let's assume we have somebody, we can use any age that you might know the numbers more readily, but say age 60 or so.
62 is the minimum.
62, okay.
So 70 is a good average age.
Age 70. So we have somebody age 70. If we assume that the value of the home is $200,000, let's assume that their equity is $100,000. Is that a good number to work with?
No. Well, it's got to be less than that probably. So let's just say they have no mortgage whatsoever.
Oh, free and clear.
Free and clear.
All right.
You're age 70,
free and clear.
You're going to be eligible for around $95,000. But then subtracting off closing costs,
$10,000.
Now you're right. Down to about 85.
Okay.
Of which you can have access to in terms of a line of credit, a payment, a lump sum, and we can talk about lump sum a little bit later on. But lump sums are limited to how much you can get at one time.
So is it often then that people will take this as a sort of annuity? Is that common?
In a way, yes. They'll treat it as an annuity, taking out monthly payments, taking out annual disbursals against that. The most common type of reverse mortgage that we see is someone setting up a line of credit whereby they draw money out as they need it, whether on it's a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, they draw out funds. FHA has a guideline set up that prevents someone from taking all of the funds at one time.
Why is that?
Because they've shown, or studies have shown, that people have blown through their save or their funds from a reverse mortgage in a very short period of time. So FHA has done two things. They've limited how much you can access in the first year, and they've also changed the way in which you make the actual request. To request funds on a reverse mortgage, you must either write a letter and submit it, or fax a note and submit that requesting your funds. You don't need to tell them what you want the money for. The bank has no concern as to what you want the money for, but FHA wants it to be a thoughtful consideration in terms of sort of a cooling off period, if you will, to make that determination of how much money you want.
And I guess it's a check against consumer fraud of the older people, et cetera.
Correct.
Well, that's interesting.
How many people do you come across that they see the reverse mortgage as just a quick fix, where they have maybe don't have the savings, or they're all of a sudden in a situation where they would blow through it? They just don't have enough money. They don't have very little equity, but this is going to solve all my problems.
Right. I'd say 65% of the folks come to us that way. It's a fair amount. We talked about this a little earlier before we came on the air, and that is the number of people who come into retirement age who just are not prepared financially to retire.
And so people perhaps hear an ad, or a neighbor says something to them about reverse mortgage, and they just see it as this pot of cash to access.
Correct. Yes. And most people are disappointed when they find out how much cash they can access. Most people come into it thinking they can access 75, 85, 100% of the value of the home. There's a misconception as to how much they can borrow.
So that's interesting. And let me repeat those numbers again. And again, these are just generalizations. But someone with, for example, around $200,000 home with no mortgage on it, age 70, in the ballpark of $95,000 they could borrow, but yet there would be potentially $10,000 or so of closing costs. So they might walk away with $85,000, which of course they couldn't take out immediately. They could take that out over time.
They can take out about 60% of that. So 47, if you had had access to $85,000 in the first year, you could access about $47,000, and that would be followed by the remaining 38 the year after. So there is still a sizable amount of money you can access in the first year, but it's not the entire amount.
Is a person's credit rating relevant since this is an asset-based loan?
Yes, it is. That's another misconception most people have, is that, well, since I don't have to make a payment, why should it matter what my credit rating is? And it goes back again to willingness and capacity to be able to show that you've had the wherewithal to pay your bills, pay your credit card debt, your homeowner's insurance, your car payments, and most importantly, your property taxes. You know, the reverse mortgages for the longest time did not inquire as to whether or not a borrower or a potential borrower was current on their property taxes. If they weren't current, all that we did is when we closed the loan, we used some of the funds available to pay their property taxes current. But that didn't mean that down the road they would stop making their property taxes and payments, and that's what happened. So now when we qualify someone, they have to show that they have paid their property taxes for the last 2 years current. That's all we're required to show. The investor on these loans has the right and the wherewithal to look beyond 2 years and to judge whether or not the borrower has, again, shown the willingness and the capacity to pay their property taxes and homeowners insurance.
We're with Bill Nass. This is Elder Talk. Back in a moment. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what is the impact of someone who's taken out a reverse mortgage loan, and then they later decide that they're going to end up in a nursing home. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
We're back with Elder Talk. Well, Bill Nass, a certified reverse mortgage specialist, was telling us about how these rules work for reverse mortgages. And this is very interesting because I wasn't aware, Susan, to these rules, even though as a lawyer, I come across these regularly and I knew the general features and outlines, but some of these things we've talked about today are new to me, so.
I'm learning so much. I'm going to tell you, I've seen commercials and I've talked to people who either love them or hate them, and now I know why. Now I know all of the ins and outs.
Yeah, you can love them, and depending on your perspective, maybe you can hate them. Let me bring up something, though. That I think is probably floating around in the minds of many people who are struggling with this decision, who are 70-plus-ish, and that's the possibility that they may end up in a nursing home. In other words, they love their homes. I've found that with our clients, with Cordell Planning Partners, that given their choice, 95% would choose to age in place, mm-hmm. meaning to stay in their home. You know, familiar neighborhoods, schools, churches,
grocery
shopping,
stores. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neighbors, relationships with a community in a broader sense of the word. And the idea of developing a familiarity with a whole different environment is tough. And even I find with every decade that goes by, I like change less and less. So on this subject, what do you say to somebody who is struggling with that possibility maybe on the future, but given that given their choice, they'd much rather stay in their home for the balance of their lives?
Well, first of all, staying in your home is oftentimes less expensive than going into an apartment. You've got the costs of selling your home, the cost of moving, and then the rent costs. So if you don't have a mortgage on your home and you're receiving proceeds from a reverse mortgage, you're only obligated to pay your property taxes, homeowners insurance, and your homeowners association if there is one. So it can be less expensive to stay in the home. It's just a matter of, do they have the physical ability to stay in the home?
And it does require some retrofitting. And we've done shows in the past mm-hmm. where though many people, the floor plan may not be ideal, often there's a lot of potential customization that can be done. And as you point out, sometimes it makes more sense to spend money on those things than all the costs associated with transition.
Correct, correct. And by the way, we didn't talk about this, but oftentimes proceeds from a reverse mortgage are used to modify the home, modify the bathrooms, move a bedroom from upstairs to downstairs to make it more of a comfortable living situation. So the proceeds can be used in a variety of ways. Obviously, there's no requirement to use it in a certain form or fashion, but modifying the home is a big use of the reverse mortgage.
And now let me contrast that with its alternative. So let's assume then that someone is in a home where they want to stay long term. One option is a traditional mortgage, but a traditional mortgage has to be serviced. So that means that they're going to have to, service means they're going to have to make payments on this loan all along the way. If they fail to do that, then their home could be foreclosed on. The other option is they take precious liquid cash, which at that point in their lives, you know, they especially want to hang on to the money that allows them to have flexibility as they age. And then, of course, there's this option here where, assuming they stay in the home, it seems like the easier decision. But let's talk more about what happens if, maybe not in the next year or two, but let's assume that in 5 years down the road that they do end up having to move into some sort of assisted living or other facility. Explain the implications of that.
Okay, so let's take, for example, there's a couple. If there's a couple and one of the two has to go into a nursing home or assisted living facility, that does not end the reverse mortgage. As long as the surviving spouse is staying in the home, living there as their primary residence, paying property taxes and homeowners insurance, they can remain in the home.
Okay, so if one spouse is there, they can keep it. What if there was another dependent there of some sort?
That's fine. Okay. That affects the qualifying a little bit because we have to prove that they have that this couple has the ability. Maybe it's an adult child that's living with them. We have to prove that they have the ability to also handle household expenses for one extra person. But let's back up a little bit. Something we haven't talked about, which is crucial to a reverse mortgage and to qualifying for a reverse mortgage, is that FHA mandates that everyone or anyone applying for a reverse mortgage must go through counseling, HUD mandatory counseling. And the counseling is designed to verify independently from the bank, independently from FHA, that the borrower or borrowers have the willingness and the capacity to live in the home as a primary residence, pay their property taxes and homeowners insurance, and have explored other options. Have they considered getting a traditional mortgage, as you mentioned, Joe? Have they considered getting a home equity line of credit? Have they considered selling the home and moving? They being FHA, wants the homeowner to consider all the possibilities, that the reverse mortgage is not the be-all, end-all answer to their problems, that they have satisfactorily explored all their options. So counseling is mandatory.
So I get it that consumer protection motives underlie these rules. But as a practical matter, does it tend to discourage much of the loans that perhaps are more legitimate because of these hurdles you have to go through, including the slower payout?
It doesn't discourage. No, I still think that the counseling doesn't discourage it because I think people have their needs in place before they do the counseling. And so the counseling is just really opening up their eyes to the other options. But still, typically, the counseling does not change their attitude. In fact, in most cases, it further enhances their attitude that they want to do the reverse mortgage.
That they're doing the right thing.
That they're doing the right thing. And this is just one more person who's helping them make their decision. The other thing we haven't talked about, and this comes into play a lot, is the aspect of the family. We really encourage the family to get involved with mom and dad to help them decide if this is the right thing or not to do. And the family can have many different opinions. Some say, we want mom and dad's equity. So when they go, that equity will come to us. Others say, mom and dad are doing fine and they need to, that we're doing fine. We don't need mom and dad's equity. Let them use it for their own purposes. Let them live their life as they get older in place in a comfortable way. So we get a mixed reaction oftentimes.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't want to sound too cynical as the lawyer here who sometimes works with the children as well as the parents. But yeah, I can see that. And I can see where the children are sometimes concerned about mom and dad's estate. and then preserving it as opposed to seeing it spent or certainly dissipated, but maybe even spent for whatever purpose.
Right.
And so I can imagine watching from the sidelines that children might be thinking, gee, you know, there goes the family home. Because as a practical matter, unless they redeem it, which they could, right? In other words, after the death, they could take other assets from the marital estate. You can tell what I used to do for a living. They would take money from the estate and then apply it toward this debt. Could they not do that?
Yes, they can. Yes, that's acceptable. Yes.
So that's an important point for people when there's a marital home. When this is a home that's been in the family for many years, and I get this. I mean, there's a house that we call the old home place where I was raised, and that house means more. It means as much to us as it did mm-hmm. and does to our parents. Mm-hmm. And I can see this situation where it's kind of reflected in the determination of the parents to stay in this house is that it's so important to them. And then in turn, the children are thinking, for those very reasons, this house is so important that I can see how they may want to redeem it in some fashion or to pay off the debt. With other assets.
You know, one thing also that happens with family is family influence from the standpoint that maybe a reverse mortgage isn't the best thing for a couple to consider, yet the family is pressuring them to do it for their own motivations. Someone needs money to start up a business. Someone needs money to take care of their own issues. And we don't have a fiduciary rule or role, but we do have an ethical responsibility. If we notice that, we definitely take a pause and step back and try to figure out what's going on here. We can tell oftentimes if the people applying for the reverse mortgage aren't really in it for themselves. And that's a serious issue.
Yeah.
They want to help their kids, and so that's the point.
And I can see where, though, from a business standpoint, you're not their lawyer, you're not their CPA, and yet you feel this ethical obligation where you sense that this entire loan is being spurred on mm-hmm. by the financial needs of the kids.
Right, right. And we've walked away. I have walked away personally from at least a handful of situations where it's just terribly obvious that the children are doing this for their own purposes and using mm-hmm. mom and dad as pawns in the process because they have the equity. They have a home that's free and clear. And it's sort of troubling.
Well, and you know that cautionary tale that floats around out there, of which we all know specific examples where you have that child that just never quite becomes self-sufficient mm-hmm. and parents are having to reach into their pockets for the child's entire life and occasionally for very expensive mm-hmm. crises, such as, you know, costs in a divorce or costs in a criminal matter. And so you'll hear of them mortgaging their homes.
Correct.
But this remedy we're talking about here provides cash without additional living expenses while they're alive.
Correct. So it really comes down to the parents. I keep saying mom and dad because most of the people we work with are couples. However, obviously a great deal of single individuals. And by the way, with individuals who are single, that's probably more the counseling probably plays more of a role there than not. We do get a lot of 85-year-old women, the little old lady from Peoria, so to speak, who comes to us without family support, and we do our best to make sure they understand what they're getting themselves into, so that we're not taking advantage of them.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about how interest rates impact the amount of money that's available on this loan. We talked about life expectancy, how it has an impact on the amount of money you can borrow just because, as you point out, the amount of the debt goes up mm-hmm. rather than down over time, so the lender wants to be protected. And also, I'm curious whether there are options for people whose credit is not wonderful to still be able to consider getting these loans since it's primarily asset-based, and you touched on that a moment ago. But before you answer that question, we're going to take a quick break. This is Elder Talk. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, back with Elder Talk. With us is Bill Nass, a certified reverse mortgage professional. Bill, before we went to break, I wanted you to talk a little bit about the impact of interest rates on the amount that you can borrow. And then also to comment on, are there some solutions for those people who don't have good credit? You mentioned earlier that generally that is important, if for no other reason, to assure that property taxes are paid, that there's some upkeep on the property, et cetera.
Yeah, Joe, as far as how interest rates affect a reverse mortgage, the higher the interest rate, the less a borrower can access. So how one qualifies, how the numbers roll, basically are a combination of your age and what the current interest rates are. So the higher the interest rates, the less amount of money that one can borrow.
So this has been a very favorable time, I guess, for reverse mortgages.
We've been in a low interest rate environment for quite some time. With the reverse mortgages, there's a fixed rate mortgage, and there's adjustable rate mortgages. The more popular versions are the adjustable rates. They're based on the LIBOR index, the London Interbank Offered Rate, both a 1-year LIBOR and a 1-month LIBOR, and those interest rates have been low for 10 years at least, and show no signs, at least in the near future, of rising. So we've been in a great environment. For those who have difficulty qualifying, let me just say this: if they have enough If they have enough equity, but they've shown that they've had difficulty with their bills, especially paying their property taxes and homeowners insurance, there's a program called the Life Expectancy Set Aside. The acronym is LISA. The Life Expectancy Set Aside takes money or equity that the borrowers would have otherwise had access to and sets it aside, sort of in an escrow account, and says, we're going to use this money to pay your property taxes and homeowners insurance for you because you've shown that you haven't had the ability to do it yourself. We'll do it for you. So you can still qualify for the reverse mortgage, but the funds that you maybe otherwise thought that you could have for your own free spending are set aside and are used for a particular purpose, and that, again, is paying property taxes and homeowners insurance.
Well, that makes sense then. And so the process for qualification for LISA is whoever they would go to. For example, if they went to Gershman Mortgage, the officers there are familiar with this process.
Yes. And it's clear cut. Again, I mentioned this earlier. If you haven't paid your property taxes completely in the last 2 years on time, that's a violation that will automatically trigger a life expectancy set aside. There's just no way around it. And you know, I shouldn't say there's no way around it. If someone has a legitimate excuse, the death of a spouse that caused the other spouse not to be able to make the payment on time, or they forgot about it because things are going on in their life, there are ways to get around it. But for the most part, if there's not a good excuse, a good reason as to why they missed paying their taxes on time, that life expectancy set aside will be put in place regardless.
So again, for people who are listening, all that means is that there's a portion of the proceeds for which you would otherwise be entitled will be set aside and held to assure these things are paid.
Are paid, correct.
And how long is that?
That again is based on actuary figures. So really, for the rest of their lives, or for the rest of what we figure their lives will be while staying in the home.
Uncle Sam's going to get his taxes.
Yes.
Can we cycle back around to we talked earlier about the situation where someone is in the home, but because of health issues, they now are going to be faced with perhaps nursing home, assisted living. How does everything work? Can you walk us through the entire process where I would love to stay there, but I no longer can, now what?
Sure. Let's take a single individual first off. If there's someone living in their home, and let's say they have to go into rehabilitative care, they're allowed to be out of the home for up to 1 year. So if they go into rehabilitative care and it takes 8 months and then they come back into the house, they can keep on going as they were before. They don't have to 4 months left now of the reverse mortgage, or the clock doesn't start ticking all over again. They can stay in the home for as long as they like. If a half a year later they need to go out again for rehabilitative care and they're out for 5 months, 6 months, but come back into the home, the loan continues. So that's how it works for a single individual. And for a couple, it's the same way. If someone has to leave the house, as long as someone is staying in the house, they're able to stay there as long as they'd like.
And what though if it is a single person and they leave and they can't indicate an intention to return?
If they can't indicate an intention to return, that's calls for an acceleration or a calling of the loan to come due. When that happens, the borrower or the borrower's family has 6 months to sell the home. 6 months to show that they have the ability to sell the home. Oftentimes, they'll be granted a 6 months extension if they can verify to the lender that they are using, that they're actively promoting the home. Typically, that's going to show that they've got a contract with a real estate agent, that they're actively trying to market the home. They're not just trying to sell it on their own, but they're marketing it on their own.
So really, then, what it means, it sounds to me like, is that this would be the equivalent of what would happen in the absence, probably, of a reverse mortgage, and that's that family members would probably be selling the home if they knew mom was never going to return to it.
Right.
And you're saying that the terms of the loan would permit them to have control of this process for a year as long as they're doing the things that would indicate they're really trying to sell
it. But technically, Joe, it's 6 months. So the lender, technically, if they wanted to, they could say that's it, 6 months, and they could call the loan and foreclose.
But that's up to the
lender. But that's up to each individual. And typically, banks don't want to foreclose. Foreclose is an expensive proposition for a bank. And so typically, again, if you can show that you've got that you're trying to actively market the home, they'll let it go beyond that period.
So what about in a situation where I'm thinking of several individuals I know where they've been in the homes, and because they've been aging, they have not kept up with the homes. And so the family needs to come in and do a lot of work. They'll need to clean out. They may need to remodel before they really can efficiently sell it. But they may not get it listed within that they might be really close to that 6 month thing.
Yeah, no, it's hard and fast. It's 6 months. So
okay.
The home would have to be in shape before the 6 months hit.
Okay.
And by the way, let's just back up a little bit about qualifying for a reverse mortgage, because you sort of hit upon that from the standpoint that the FHA appraisal, which is done on the property, is looking for things like health and safety. So if there are some issues with the home that don't quite meet health and safety standards, that can be a reason for not approving the loan. I'm talking about major cracks in a sidewalk or a driveway where there could be a tripping hazard, or if there's a set of stairways leading into the house that's narrow and there's no handrail. Those are issues that have to be dealt with before a reverse mortgage can be put into place.
And are there inspections every year, or is it just a one-time
thing?
No.
Now, there are caveats that say there can be inspections, but I've never heard of anyone actually being inspected. But those clauses are there. And can be, if the lender for some reason finds out that there may be an issue, they have the right to inspect.
But I wonder if the lender would not sometimes prefer to simply leave the loan in place, where they have a favorable interest rate, there's substantial equity, the person's moving out but still would like to keep the home there. Why would it not be in the lender's interest to continue along and let the meter run?
I think from the standpoint that they're concerned about whether the home is kept up, if it's who's taking care of the home, who's keeping it in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whenever people are struggling with this, I guess their range of options are, if mom or dad wants to stay in the home but they need some cash, one option is, of course, the traditional loan. And so let's think about these possibilities. So if they have a traditional loan, it means payments are going to have to be made. Mm-hmm. So let's assume that they went with a traditional loan, and then 5 years later they have to go into a nursing home. So the implications are that they have to repay the loan in some fashion, maybe not all at once, but they're certainly going to have to keep making payments.
Right, correct.
Are they typically able to access a larger percentage of the value of their home? And of course, I know the answer to this question. But anyway, as I'm asking it, so they could typically access a larger portion of the equity in their home by way of a traditional loan versus a reverse mortgage.
Oh, yes, by all means, they can access more. But of course, it comes with the payment factor. But, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, and that is doing a reverse mortgage when you currently have a mortgage. So you take this home that has a value of $200,000, and the borrowers owe $50,000. Well, what happens then is we pay off their existing mortgage. That turns into a reverse mortgage where they no longer have a payment. They've got a loan still, but no longer make the payment. And they're going to have access to that extra $35,000 that was left over that otherwise would have come to them free and clear under the other caveat. This way, we pay off the existing mortgage. And that can be a savings right there. If their $50,000 mortgage was costing them $650 a month in terms of payment, that just freed up $650 a month by not having to make that payment anymore.
Yeah, that was a question I had, because I know a lot of seniors that are still have home loans mm-hmm. that don't own their home free and clear. I mean, they may not even have a $200,000 home, but they still have a payment. It may not be $600, but it might be $300, $500, $400. I mean, right. all of those things are adding up.
Right. As long as the loan amount that they have doesn't exceed what the ratios are as far in terms of eligibility. We have people who do reverse mortgages who get nothing out of it in terms of extra cash, payments, none of that. They simply pay off their existing mortgage, and not having that payment is what their savings are. And that can oftentimes mean the difference between staying in the house and not.
Yeah, not having
That's
the payment.
That's a very important point.
Yeah. Yeah. Not having a payment and still able to stay
and
in your house.
Still able to stay in the house.
That's awesome.
So what portion, I'm curious, what portion of the mortgage business is represented by reverse mortgage? It has to be a small fraction.
It's a very small portion. And that's one of the reasons why more banks aren't involved, because it's just not really, and I don't know the exact percentages, but I bet it's less than 10% of all mortgages are reverse mortgages. It's just a very small portion. And that's why we've seen in the past a lot of major banks getting out of the business. There was a time when Wells Fargo and Bank of America were involved in doing reverse mortgages, and they got out. And one of the reasons they got out was the small volume. But the other reason they got out was because of the liability in terms of perception. Banks are required to foreclose if the rules are not followed. And it just didn't look good when someone like Wells Fargo mm-hmm. is foreclosing against the little old lady from Peoria, 85 years old. She's lived in her home for 40 years, and now Wells Fargo is throwing her out. She may have violated all the terms that she was supposed to follow, but regardless, it doesn't mm-hmm. look good when Wells Fargo evicts an 85-year-old woman.
So those and they have enough problems already.
Yeah,
exactly. But maybe I shouldn't have used Wells Fargo as the example. Bank of America, they chose also to get out of the business because it was just not in their best interest in terms of what can be negative publicity.
So what are some of the reasons people don't pursue reverse mortgages?
Some of the reasons why they don't pursue it are the high closing costs. They can't get over the fact that the closing costs are expensive. That's probably the number one reason. And the other reason is they just realize that, you know, they want to preserve that equity for whatever reason. Again, it's the holy grail. Home equity has always been the holy grail for homeowners, especially of this generation or of the generation that's eligible for reverse mortgages. It's just you worked your life to pay the home off, and now it's paid off, and it's mine. I'm going to keep it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pass it along to my children or pass it along to somebody. And so so those are the two main reasons, preserving the equity and the closing costs.
Well, and sometimes I wonder if people aren't worried about, I might need that for nursing home expenses. I mean, we've talked about that on this program several different times on different ways to pay for long-term care. Mm-hmm. But I always think in the back of your mind, that would be your one big asset that you might have that would help you pay for long-term care.
Well, and if you have a spouse that's continuing to live in the home, then that may very well be a way to access some cash and to keep the house, you know, mm-hmm. without a payment. But I see where it becomes dicey is if you don't have a spouse there at home, and if you do want to keep the house. I think if as a practical matter it works out that you have a year to sell the house, I think that's very reasonable. I get your point that the contract only guarantees six months, but I also get it as a business person that the probability that you would get an approval that you go ahead and continue trying to sell it would likely be granted, certainly if I'm the lender, simply because it's in my interest. You're probably going to sell it more efficiently than I would if you're really trying to sell it.
Right. And, of course, mortgage insurance and interest is still being collected on the loan. That does not stop. Even if the person has passed away, that does not stop. One thing I'd like to mention, I mentioned the closing costs can oftentimes be a stumbling block for people in their consideration of a reverse mortgage. The closing costs are not paid for out of pocket. They come out of what you're eligible for. So when I say the closing costs can be $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, this is not $10,000 that you write a check for that's coming out of your pocket. It comes out of the proceeds of what you're eligible for.
Which in fact happens often with traditional mortgages, is that sometimes points and whatnot
can be rolled in.
Yeah, being paid in a larger balance. So this is interesting, and I can see where it's a very complicated, or at least a very potentially complicated area that people should sit down with and consider the range of options carefully. If you put together the right factors, I can see where this would be a marvelous tool. But I also see in some of the examples that you present, which incidentally I appreciate, a very fair-minded presentation. I mean, in other words, in this discussion, you didn't come across as a person who is here to sell reverse mortgages, though I know that, in fact, you're a true believer. But instead, you presented the pros and cons, and I think in a very balanced way.
And Joe, we do that when we're working with clients. We don't feel it's our job to push this product, but rather educate the consumer. It's too big of a decision for us to be hounding them, calling them on a regular basis, writing them letters, let's do this, let's do this, let's close the loan, let's close the loan. It's just not that kind of product. Gershman doesn't want to have that kind of reputation in the community where we're trying to shove something down somebody's throat. Again, it's educating the consumer. It's educating the consumer's family. Let them make the decision whether or not this is the right thing to do or not.
This was the voice of Bill Nass, certified reverse mortgage professional with Gershman Mortgage. Bill, it was very educational, I know, very helpful to our listeners. This has been another week of Elder Talk. Till next time.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.